straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 242, brought to you by Hook'em.com. Our good friends at Bud Light, Sid Golden here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles, jam-packed podcast today, Duck. We've got Texas basketball coach Chris Beard will be joining us a little later. A little FYI to our listeners. We're undergoing a studio change, so we had some audio problems in that interview, but it was such good stuff that we're still going to run it, and we apologize in advance for that. Duck, it's still football season, sad to say. The Longhorns and West Virginia on Saturday. You're headed up with the Davis boys. Is there any way you could talk our bosses out of sending us to that?
I know you're just sick about missing this trip.
I am.
You're eating your heart out. So I will imagine you on the couch all day Saturday watching the best in college football. So, I did a radio interview with the West Virginia outlet this week, and they said it's going to be 52 degrees and cloudy and overcast.
You always take 10 degrees off. When the local say it's going to be something, you take off 10 degrees if it's above the Mason-Dixon. So you plan for me?
I hate cold.
Big coat.
I will bring a jacket. I don't know if I'll bring the pea coat or not, but I will bring a jacket for sure. So, you know, they're playing out the string. I mean, let's call it what it is. And I mean, just right off the top, do you see any way they're going to win out these last two games, Sid?
They might, because we don't expect them to, but if I'm a betting man, and I am, Duck, I am, but I don't bet on Longhorn stuff, I would bet against them. I could see a 1-1. I could see West Virginia pulling it together. If Kansas can come down here and beat Texas and Austin, you're telling me that the Mountaineers, even though they're 2-5 overall and 4-6 in conference play, can hold serve in the mountains against the Longhorns, who are broken and battered and traveling?
Yeah, the last 2 weeks on the road, the last two games, I'll say, at Ames, Iowa, where you were, they score all of 7 points. And then the road trip before that was Waco. They didn't play great and blew 11-point third quarter lead. So you're right. I mean, you know, I know West Virginia is a slight favorite. I'm not the biggest Jarrett Daigie fan in the world. I think he's very inconsistent. But he leads the Big 12 in passing yardage. He's got 245 yards a game through the year, and you got to respect that. And Letty Brown, as you and I both know, is a man. He's a bullish running back. I don't know. I think they must be having some offensive line problems themselves, because he's only averaging 75 yards a game, but he does have 11 touchdowns. And as a team, they rank last in the Big 12, 112 yards a game on the ground. So I'm not sure what's up with that.
Something tells me they're going to figure some things out on the ground on Saturday, because teams run it. Teams run it on this PK defense. And big picture, we didn't see this coming. We both had them at 8-4. I think Brian Davis may have had them at 9-3. And Daniel Davis had them at 10-2. And so it's an ugly season. It's going to be over soon. And I think that when Chris Del Conte, Jay Hartzell, and Kevin Eltype brought in Sarkisian, they thought they were bringing in Saban's trusted assistant, and they are. They got him. But there's a big difference between being an assistant and being a head coach of a sleeping giant that's been asleep for quite a while.
No, you're right. I mean, just because you're a great coordinator doesn't mean you're a great head coach. David McWilliams, one of the best defensive coordinators I've ever been around at Texas. He came to Texas after a one-year head coaching apprenticeship, if you will, at Texas Tech, and then came here for 5 years, had 3 losing seasons. You know, Will Muschamp's another one. Muschamp, again, one of the best defensive minds I've ever been around. And nobody was better at adjusting, but he was a miserable failure at Florida and South Carolina. And I kind of think his career as a head coach is done. I can't imagine him getting another chance. Now, I'd love to see, you know, Sarkisian bring in a Will Muschamp to run the defense, or Gary Patterson, like we've talked about. Although I keep thinking Gary Patterson, he might show up at Virginia Tech. You know, they let go Justin Fuente this week, and I know they're buddies, though. I don't know if Gary Patterson would you know, come in after Justin Fuente, but a job's a job, you know.
And
you
Justin, and I Justin think, used to work for the little general.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, and Patterson's not done, obviously.
No.
We're getting off track a little bit because, like you say, I mean, so I'll ask you straight out. Was it a mistake to hire Steve Sarkisian as head coach at Texans?
It's too early to say that. I'm not ready to go there yet. Right. I do believe that, and I stood behind what I said when they hired him. I thought it was a lukewarm hire. It wasn't a home run hire. 34-29 as a head coach, and great that he's overcome some personal obstacles in his life. And I really enjoy our conversations with Coach Sarkisian. He's a football man and he's no nonsense. And I enjoy that part about it. But at the same time, it hasn't equated to wins. And, you know, the locker room has to be divided. When you lose like they've lost, Duck, there's no way for a locker room to be united. They're 5-1. They're on their way to 5-1 if they hold a 28-7 lead over OU. And then the very next week, they're on their way to going up 24-3 in the second quarter against the Oklahoma State Cowboys, and they throw an 80-yard pick six. And so it's been all downhill from there. It's been an avalanche of misfortune, and Sarkisian has had a lot of answers, but the results have not followed those answers.
Well, losing to Kansas anywhere is not a good sign. Losing to Kansas at home on your own field is even worse and very problematic. And I don't know, you know, said you and I were at the game and wrote about it. And what's really troubling was the start, you know, they got off to, you know, trailing 35-14 to Kansas at the halftime. You know, you're not even competitive at that point. It was just the opposite of the Iowa State road game you were at. They're leading 7-3 against a good, not a great, a good Iowa State team. At home against a 1-8 Kansas, they're down by 21. And, yeah, you know, the two sack slash fumbles and the pick six had a lot to do with that because Texas had four turnovers and Kansas had zero. But there's no way to sugarcoat a loss to Kansas or trailing by 21 twice in the game.
And, you know, and he was very you know, he goes, we came back and we won. We outscored them 35-14 to force overtime. And I'm sitting there going, why are you in a dogfight with the Kansas Jayhawks? Why are you in a firefight with Kansas? And Texas has struggled against Kansas in recent times. So, me and you have gone back and forth about this coaching staff, and you think he might dig his heels in and think he's going to stay pat. I don't think so. A couple of heads are going to have to roll, in my opinion.
You would think so. You're right. Well, but he sounded stubborn, didn't he, Monday?
A little stubborn. And, let's let the listeners draw their own conclusion. Listen to the exchange he had with our own Brian Davis.
Steve, with signing day 1 month away from today, has anyone in administrative circles told you that you need to make staff changes, or are you prepared to say that this staff will return intact?
No one's told me that at all. You know, when I got hired, I give our administration a lot of credit. They gave me the resources to go hire, you know, what I opinion was arguably the best staff in the country, if not one of the top staffs in the country. These guys didn't forget to coach overnight. They've been doing it for a long time at a very high level. They're championship caliber coaches. They've developed NFL players. They've developed All-Americans, All-Conference players. They've competed for championships. They've won championships, whether it's at the college ranks or in the NFL. So I've got a lot of belief in our staff. But hear me when I say this, and this isn't a negative. When the season comes to an end, I evaluate everything in our program. And you ultimately do what's in the best interest of the university and the program. And that's not to say I'm going to evaluate nutrition, strength and conditioning, practice, our format, our schemes, our coaches, our players. That's all encompassing. And that's part of the job to do that. But no, I have not been told that I need to make changes.
They didn't forget the coach overnight.
Not overnight.
But maybe over the last five games, they maybe forgotten how to coach. I know that someone's got to pay. It ain't going to be Sarkisian. But no. Somebody's got to go. And I don't think it's going to be PK either, even though it should be PK. But I don't think they want to give PK $4 million to go away. So
it'd probably be more looking at Andre Coleman, the receiver coach, Jeff Banks, special teams, tight ends, great recruiter because of all the off the field drama. Maybe Blake Gideon, safeties coach.
He's Brendan Schooler's coach.
Yes, he knows how to drop passes. Correct?
Like coach, like student. Yeah,
Schooler was a wide receiver.
If ever there was a guy you'd want him throwing the ball to at the end of the game, it's Brendan.
Yeah.
How many jugs machines has he made friends with? You got to catch. You just got to catch that.
Make a play. And you and I were yesterday after the press conference, you and I were looking at the video because Keandre Coburn said, man, I just almost got a fingertip on that 2-point pass for the conversion of the win. And they did. He was just an inch off or something like that. But then he was this close to knocking that pass down win. But at the same time, they're this far away from being a good team. So even if they won, it wouldn't have masked a whole lot of deficiencies on this team.
No, it wouldn't have. And I feel bad for really nice guys on the team like Bijan Robinson, like Snacks.
Right.
Those are good. Rojo is decent. And Casey is decent. They're really nice young men, and they represent the school in classy, professional fashion. They're just not winning football games, and that's a real problem. And like Steve said, winning is contagious, but so is losing. And it's an avalanche right now, and what are they going to do? No one has confidence in them. They don't have confidence in themselves. And it's just like one of those things where you look at a duck and you go, you know what? It's time for it to be over. And they probably don't need to go to a bowl game.
Yeah, they probably don't. I mean, they don't look anything like a bowl game. But it's like we've been screaming all year, make a friggin' play. Stop the Oklahoma comeback. And that's on the coaching staff as much as the players, because – I don't think Kwiatkowski's making the adjustments. You know, I'm so sick of these two high safeties and these cornerbacks that are given a 10-yard cushion. And, yeah, okay, they don't have great linebackers, but they brought in some linebackers.
Who aren't great. They were available for a reason.
And they're not on the field. And the D-line, I mean, for all the positive strokes that Bo Davis got after the leak video, his D-line hasn't measured up either. I mean, that was supposed to be the strength of the team. Sarkisian has told us that for 10 months that, yeah, love our depth and our strength of our D-line, but they don't have one playmaker on there. And, you know, I personally thought Alfred Collins was going to be that. But
after that bowl game, we're like, that guy's going to be a star.
Yeah, but he's probably a defensive tackle, not an edge rusher. And where's Jatavion Sanders? You know, he's just
a tight end. He's playing tight end, Doug.
Yeah, he is. Well, you got so many edge rushers, you don't really need him at edge rusher.
You don't really need him at tight end. When have their edge rushers gotten home? You're talking about you have them, but they're not making an impact.
And their blitzes, are terrible. I know Todd Orlando would do that a lot. You blitz him from Pflugerville, and, oh, my God, he's 4 yards away, and they throw the pass. The blitzes never work. How many successful blitzes have they had this year? Not that they blitz that much, but
there's a reason they don't blitz much.
And I'm looking, you know, Texas is seventh in the 10-team league in defense, giving up 40 touchdowns, 40. And they're second in offense, and they're averaging 38 a game. You average 38 a game, you shouldn't be sitting here 4-6. Okay.
You should be 6-4, 7-3, maybe even 8-2, Duck.
Maybe.
They were so close to being 5-1 yet so far. And I'm telling you, it's a question of defense this year. The offense has been okay. The offensive line, we've ripped them. They deservedly so. And I'm not going to even call them by name. They're all very below average. But the defense has been the story of 2021. And you know, you being the scholarly columnist that you are, you ask him about the defense. Check this out.
Yes, Steve. I wonder if you anticipate considerable roster turnover and expect more transfers. And a second part is, do you feel like you need to get more involved in the defense and being play caller and head coach?
Two good questions. I think one, you know, I'm looking at the way this thing is shaping up and some of the new NCAA rules. I could easily see us with 33 new scholarship players on our team by next fall, which when you look at a number of 85 total, 33 will be new players next fall. You know, more than a third of our roster will be new. And that's the nature of the business that we're in. Obviously, the transfer portal and the NCAA has provided that for players to go and do that. You know, clearly we have to find the right balance into how much we interact in the portal as opposed to how much we dive into recruiting really good young players out of high school and then developing them over time so that you have sustainability on your roster. Yeah, the fact is, I mean, you think about 33 new scholarship players, you know, kicking off the season next year, that's a pretty big number, you know, considering, you know, what normally it would look like when a lot of teams are in that 20 to 25 range right in there. So pretty big number, but that's part of the process. I think from a defensive perspective, I would envision that happening, especially as we move into the offseason. I felt like it was so important to get us kind of settled down. You know, I had to focus in on what we were doing offensively, big picture as a team. We've got great experience on our defensive staff with PK, Bo Davis, Jeff Choate. I mean, these guys have been doing it a long time at a high level. But I do think I have some real experience and expertise in coaching football where I can add some value to, you know, what we're installing, how we're coaching it, and how to play some of the plays that now I'm getting used to our conference of how people are attacking us and maybe a different way to defend things.
It's the same old excuses.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And like I said, I mean, they've thrown two pick sixes. Where are their pick sixes on defense? I mean, you know, it's funny. The special teams has been good. Cameron Dicker's been nails. I think
they haven't had the big kickoff returns from Jameson or punt returns. Game changers.
But they blocked some punts. They blocked some punts.
Yes.
But they're not getting their returns. Dicker's been excellent. You know, he's not even getting that many field goal chances. But I think he can be the all conference punter. I think he's had that good a year. But you need. I don't know if I've ever seen a Texas team more that needs a cheap score or two, a pick six where you just throw it up in the air, or, you know, a Deshaun Jameson, you know, 65-yard punt return. They're just starving for something, an easy score. Because, like, we were watching Kansas, and Kansas is just going through them like warm butter. And then Texas going, oh, here's an 80-yard drive, takes 10 plays.
They were matriculating in Kansas. In five plays is back.
Other things, Xavier Worthy, where's the explosiveness, you know? And the line's been so bad, so we weren't seeing big chunk plays from Bijan, you know, during this five-game losing streak. And now Bijan's done for the year. You know, God bless him. You know, he's so good, I want to adopt him.
Josh Thompson, he's gone.
And Jonathan Brooks, the other running back, Bruce Shoulder, probably not going to play. So it's Roshan and Keelan Robinson. I want to see Keelan Robinson carry the ball a dozen times and just see
just
what he
can do. Just to see.
Just to see. But Roshan will probably get the bulk of the carries. And Daniel Young, the closer.
Bring him in. Let's rename him the opener. Give him some first quarter totes.
Oh, my God. I don't know if I'll be surprised if they win Saturday in the mountains there. I really will.
I'm not picking them again this year.
I'm not either. You can't pick them. You can't pick them. You're just throwing your pick away, I think. So,
and I need to know, I need to figure out when how many times I've picked them. I think I've picked against them twice this year. And they should have they should be 7-3 minimum. Yeah.
Well, I picked Arkansas to beat them. I don't think I've ever been more sure of a win than Arkansas at Fayetteville. And but I really, the one that kind of really grabbed me was the Baylor game, because, you know, they just come off two close losses to Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. And I thought, okay, they've still got a chance at, you know, getting second place here. And it's like they went up there and laid an egg.
But, you know, the one thing we do, Doug, is we, you know, because we're around them and we're close to them and we cover them, we sometimes give them the benefit of the doubt. We play the desperation. Oh, they're desperate. They're going to be pissed off. They're going to go in there and they're going to be, their hair's going to be on fire. They haven't played with any desperation this year.
No.
I haven't seen their hair on fire. I haven't seen them getting into scuffles with the other team. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen any urgency, any rage. And so I just think that there are a bunch of nice guys who aren't very good at football collectively. Yeah.
BJ Foster, what a disappointment he was. I mean, he didn't show up at all against Kansas. I thought Scooter actually played pretty well the last two games.
He's had a nice stretch. He just can catch that ball.
And Luke Brockermeyer is just, you know.
Oh, they just throw it over. He drops back in coverage, and they just lob it over his head every time.
Well, and then he had the quarterback, you know, in his sights right there, like the 5-yard line. He just glances off of him and runs in the end zone. You know, Luke Brockermeyer, good kid, nice kid, but
just a guy.
You know, he shouldn't be starting for your Texas defense. So they just got so many holes there. And, you know, you combine holes with some lack of experience and maybe some lack of want to, because some of the, you know, Keandre Coburn and Casey Thompson were more than hinting to us this week on Monday that, yeah, some of the guys may need to leave here, because even Casey said there's probably 10% of the group that haven't bought in yet and aren't accountable, and you got to figure it out. So,
and do you really want to be coaching some malcontents during a bowl season? I mean, that's time better spent getting rid of the malcontents and getting your ducks in a row for next season and figuring out what this recruiting class is going to be, how these new kids fit in. So I'm never a proponent of losing. But in this case, I just don't know that extra bowl practices for guys who don't want to be there will benefit the Longhorns moving forward, Duck.
So how about this scenario? Win your last two, go 6-6 and decline a bowl game.
They won't do that. They'll take the bowl game.
No, I know you will. Exactly.
I really don't put it past them to win these next two games, but I would never pick them to do it.
Yeah.
I mean,
to me, the only way they win Saturday said is that they get one of those cheap scores, a pick six, a punt return, block punt for a score. They got to get something cheap, because, boy, the minute some adversity strikes, they just seem to kind of fold up their tent. Although they came back from 21 points down twice. So the offense had some fight left. And Marcus Washington played really well, and I thought he got screwed on that penalty, spinning the ball. I mean, come on, look the other way. He wasn't taunting anybody.
You're not getting the benefit of the doubt from Big 12 ref stuff. You just aren't. Exactly. They get a chance to stick it to Texas, they're going to stick it to them.
Yeah.
They're taking money. Because maybe those game checks aren't as fat next year when it's Cincinnati at Baylor as opposed to Texas at Baylor or OU at Baylor. Those game checks might not be as fat. So if you spin the ball, you're getting 15, fam. You're getting 15. That's just how that is.
Yeah, and we'll see a few horns down on Saturday in Morgantown.
Just a couple.
We saw it at Gonzaga. They were doing the horns down the basketball game in Spokane, of all places.
So oh, my God.
Let's get this season over with.
That's called a tease, Doug. Let's get to our basketball guest.
On Second Thought.
Doug, it's basketball season officially, and the Texas Longhorns are off and running, and we are joined by their illustrious head coach, Chris Beard. I call him CB, even though I don't really know him that well.
So how would you describe the game against Gonzaga?
We're disappointed, ultimately, in the outcome, but it's exactly what we needed. You know, I told the guys before the game, it really doesn't matter what happens in this game. We are who we are, and we have to start somewhere, and it's all about where we go from here. I love the game. I loved it when we scheduled it. I'd play it 100 of 100, and now it'll be really pivotal and important where we go from here.
Drew, we see a handful, returning All-American, career high 37 points. I mean, he's just a load for anybody. And, you know, your front court, you're not the biggest team in America. We all know that. Who would you say stood up the best? Evan asked you, hit a few moments. I don't know if you're going Marcus Carr's performance, or what do you feel like you got out of those two?
I wasn't disappointed in anybody. I mean, I'll take a lot of credit. You know, I've always had a problem with the coach. It kind of sits around and talks about the number one team in the country for a reason. They have one of the best home courts in college basketball for a reason. So we just didn't play well early. You know, it needed to be a game that we were down 10, 12 points at halftime, and we would have had a chance to get back in it. But we just dug too big of a hole. In the second half, you know, I would argue that we outplayed them. It was a tale of two halves. We cut the game to 10 or 11 points three times. We just couldn't get that one more momentum play to get us over the hump. But certainly not disappointed in the guys individually, just kind of disappointed in our team that we didn't take advantage of the opportunity that we had.
Chris, what were the conversations like back on that flight? That is a long-ass flight back to Austin. So you had plenty of time to walk that aisle and pull each guy aside and tell him what you thought. What were some of those conversations like? Because I love that you schedule an early season test. That's a great way to find out where you are.
Yeah, no question, especially first year with new players. Again, we love the game. Look forward to having those guys back in Austin next season, you know, for hopefully a different outcome, but same kind of marquee matchup. You know, that we just stay the course. The conversations after the game were very similar to the conversations before the game. We're going to learn a lot about ourselves tonight. We did. It's a starting point. It was. Now we just got to get better. So I'm a guy, you know, as you guys get to know me and I get to know you guys, I don't get too high or too low. We're going to win some big games around here. We're going to have some disappointing games. We stay the course, you know, when it matters most, which is March.
Now, I want to ask you about Dylan Dykes, who, you know, your big guy from transfer from Vanderbilt, led the SEC in rebounding, still coming off knee surgery in February. What's his timetable, and when do you hope to get him back on the court for you, Chris?
Yeah, Dylan's obviously a difference maker for us. He's a special player. What he did in the SEC was real. He's had some adversity with an injury. If he didn't have that, he, you know, might have been a 21 draft hopeful kind of guy. He's right there. He's a great player. We have high expectations for him. I wish I had just kind of a clear window for everybody, but I don't. What I can tell you is that he's ahead of schedule. I think it's very accurate to say he's going to play sooner than later. I think it's very accurate that we're on a week kind of process here. It's not months. It's not years. He's practicing with the team right now. So, you know, we hope to get him back as soon as we can. This isn't a guy just trying to play his last, you know, high school game. This is a guy that's going to play basketball for a long time. He's going to be in the NBA.
I wanted to ask you about Timmy Allen. I'm really intrigued by him. He's kind of a tweener, and he's 6'6". He's big, nice size, transfer out of Utah. I mean, there are times when he had the nice mid-range going, and then he shoot a three. Is he trying to figure out what he is? Because I like him in mid-range, but he's got the ability to make those shots. Where is he as far as figuring out what you need from him on a night-by-night basis?
Yeah, Timmy knows exactly who he is. He's a veteran player. You know, what he's done in Division I basketball speaks for itself. You guys can find the exact stat, or Scotty Mack will have it, I'm sure. But he was one of the only players in the country that had the combination of scoring, rebounding, and assist. He's an all defensive kind of player too. So he knows who he is. I think what's safety is that we're all trying to figure out kind of how this thing's going to work together, you know, and when we knew this, right, we're not changing our tune. This has been the conversation since the first day we got the job as we put this team together, and it'll continue. We're a work in progress. There's going to be some nights, and man, we could beat anybody in the country, and there'll be other nights that we all kind of scratch our heads and say, hey, we got to continue to figure this out. We just got to figure everything's going to work together. And it's not just the offensive end either. It's the defensive end. Guys are trying to figure out, you know, kind of where we go from here. We can't get too low. We just got to keep getting better, and we will. He is definitely 100% capable of being physical enough to play in any league, including professional basketball. Just about the consistency of doing it possession by possession. And the best thing about Trey is he's a self-analyzer. He's a student of the game. He tells himself the truth and others the truth. He's very kind of hard and on himself. He's an analytical guy, and we're early in the stages. And I think the last game was kind of a microcosm of everything, right? There was obviously, but then I would argue there were some possessions in the second half where he was the best player on the floor. So, you know, we established him early in the second half, and we got to do a better job of that as a program, guard play, coaching. Trey is more than capable of doing what we need done. It's just a matter of doing it and being consistent.
You're talking about scoring, and you got what all these transfers are, double-digit scorers, and you struggle to put baskets together consecutively at Spokane. Are sometimes players like that too unselfish because they don't want to come in and get a reputation as a ball hog because they were scorers in their last programs?
Yeah, there's some truth to that. I mean, the guys' hearts are in the right place. The guys are coming down and they're trying to execute what we want done, the program. But then you've also got a lot of individual competitors there. You know, it's like, you know, Andrew Jones is an aggressive player. He's a killer offensively. He gets the ball. He wants to get a bucket. And we want him to play with that aggressiveness. But we also want to play with a balance. It's no different than you guys are familiar with some of these five-star high school guys coming in here that all average 30 and they've got to figure it out. It's no different. Division One transfers where everybody remembers them seeing them play last year on national television. And it's kind of interesting to see how this thing will work out. But it's no different than any other team with new players early in the season. We're trying to work it out. But I think our guys' hearts are in the right place. The right things are being said in the locker room before the game, after the game, on the airplane. There's a lot of accountability right now on our team. And so it feels good right now. Again, the outcome isn't what we wanted. That's Captain Obvious, but it's a growth curve. It's a game that we played on purpose, and we intend to make the game help us as the season goes on.
It's like a good stew, though. You know, you cook a good stew, and you never eat that stew the day you cook it. You let those flavors marry in the fridge, and then that next day you warm it up, and everything's tasting so good. You're putting in the pieces in place early in the season, and you're hoping that it'll bear fruit by Big 12 play. Your veterans, those four guys that you brought back, the program veterans, Jones, Cunningham, Febris, and Ramey, how have they been with their new teammates? And I know you've had all offseason to get them to know each other, but on court, how do you see that starting to meld early in this season?
I think all four guys have done a good job to this point. They executed about everything we could in the summer, the preseason. You know, now the next step is we're playing games. So I can answer that question in terms of what's happened. And they've done a great job. They've all been open to change new things.
Chris, you obviously bit off a lot with Gonzaga. A lot of the rest of your schedule isn't near as tough. And I wonder, is that partly by design because you knew the makeup of your roster was going to be so new and you wanted more cohesion and chemistry than maybe the severe challenges like you got from the Zags?
Not necessarily. I mean, there's only one number one team, right? So we can't play against it twice. I'll be able to just kind of see how this thing plays out. I think there's some really quality NCAA tournament teams on our schedule. I think you guys are going to be overly impressed with Northern Colorado tomorrow. It's a team that's already won a road game against Hawaii. They beat Pacific. They're really good guys. I think they've got a player that'll play in the NBA on their team. They're one of the oldest teams in college basketball. They return six of their top seven. They have five guys in double figures, and they're one of the best rebounders in college basketball. And that's just tomorrow night's game. So I think as this thing goes on, Seton Hall is really good. Stanford plays in the Pac-12. I mean, I think the schedule will pay dividends, and we all know what Coach Barnes is going to bring here in a couple months. But scheduling is a different deal. You know, it's obviously the sport would be a lot better if we could all schedule our schedules when we know exactly what team we're coaching, but that's not the way it works. Okay. Kind of like football, you know, they schedule those games 10 years right. ahead of time. You know, I think both sports would be a little bit better if the scheduling was a little bit different. I don't know how to get that done, but that's just my opinion.
Man, we appreciate you being with us today and dropping some knowledge on us, and hope we get to do it again real soon. And congratulations on the good early start. I know great things are ahead.
Thank you, guys. I'm here for you anytime. Sorry about the audio stuff earlier.
Take care. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You, Chris. Take care.
Bye-bye.
On Second Thought.
Duck, once again, we apologize for the choppy audio, but Chris Beard always has his game face on. Now, this was taped on Tuesday, so the Longhorns have played another game since then. That's why we were so Gonzaga heavy on this podcast, but it's going to be an interesting mix to see. I know he said that Timmy Allen knows what he's doing. He does, Doug, but I saw him taking too many threes against Gonzaga when he's more of a mid-range guy.
Yeah, and the offense was very spotty. You know, I think sometimes they are a little bit too selfless. We know they can score because these transfers all scored in double figures. And then once they get Daisu back, obviously you can hear Chris Beard's excitement about his potential. So, and you know, he led.
Hey, I looked it up. It's Disu.
Disu, excuse me.
Disu. Yeah, I looked it up.
Who is not as soft as tissue because he's physical and he gets after it. And he's a Pflugerville guy. Of course he's tough, right?
He's Hendrickson. He's from Hendrickson. They have good basketball over there. Before we get out of here, just a little bit on the NFL. The Cowboys are playing at the Kansas City Chiefs. Man, I wish I could go to that one. That's going to be a barn burner. The resurgent Cowboys and the resurgent Kansas City Chiefs. Do you think the Cowboys are going to go in there and hand it to Patrick Mahomes and company? You do.
I Why? Believe in the Cowboys. I believe in the Cowboys because they're a more complete team. They're on both sides of the ball. They're so improved. Micah Parsons, you know, Trayvon Diggs. I mean, Parsons may be rookie of the year. I mean, they're getting it done. They're playing complimentary football, which we haven't seen any of in Austin this year. So I think Kellen Moore's team – oh, I'm sorry, Mike McCarthy's team will go into Arrowhead and get it done. I like I think they're a top three team right now.
I'm taking the Kansas City Chiefs.
No, you're not.
The Dallas Cowboys. Yes, I am.
Oh.
Yes, I am.
Why are you calling the upset?
I think your boy Travis Kelce has finally found himself. And I know I kicked your butt in the Fantasy League game this week, but – I think Kelce is back. Tyreek Hill got back in the end zone. He got some paint on his pants. And Patrick Mahomes is starting to figure out that it's okay to not hit a home run. He hit a lot of doubles on Sunday night. I think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to get enough stops, and they're going to beat the Dallas Cowboys 37-34.
That ought to be a ratings bonanza this weekend. And I'll say this. It almost seems like college football is trickling it up into the NFL. When you see Tampa Bay look crummy and Bruce Arians says, we got a dumb team.
He said, we're just stupid.
Yeah, we're stupid. The Rams, no show against the 49ers, you know.
And the Buccaneers, no show against the fighting Daniel Snyder.
I said, Bruce Arians called them stupid.
And Buffalo Bills. No show against Jacksonville 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Miami, you know, raising up and beating people. So
No.
Wait a minute. Don't go that far. But it just seemed like there's getting to be parity in NFL, same as in the college ranks where you got Georgia and everybody else. So should be exciting playoff, at least for the NFL.
Well, what about college? What's wrong with the college playoff?
Because Georgia's going to mop up against whoever.
You really think Georgia's just going to do said Golden a solid and make him right in the preseason, yeah, picking the Bulldogs?
I think
you
so.
You think they're going to win the championship?
No, I don't, there's no doubt in my mind.
Oh, wow. Oh,
and
wow.
I think really maybe the only team, maybe Ohio State could stop them because they're kind of on a roll right now. C.J. Stroud is really playing well, but I don't know. It just – like Georgia. I mean, that defense is a generational defense. So Kirby Smart, better get it done this year, Kirby. If you don't get it done this year, people are going to lose a little faith.
And one more thing, shout out to Vic Schaefer.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Texas women for going up to Palo Alto and taking out the defending, reigning national champion Stanford Cardinal. Aaliyah Matharu, Rory Harmon, Audrey Warren, the sergeant at arms.
Didn't even need Kendall Hunter.
Didn't need Kendall Hunter. Played, what, 3 minutes?
Yeah.
So they are – Vic Schaefer has announced to college basketball that the Texas Longhorns are coming for championships. This is real, Doug.
I just – you know, the thing that saddens me about that is that why isn't Vic Schaefer coaching this football team?
Oh, my God.
He's got the passion. He's got the Bo Davis passion without the vocabulary, you know. But in all seriousness, just like you said, hats off to him to pull that off on the road against a returning national champion with like four starters back. So it's very impressive. Hats off to you, Vic Schaefer. Had you on the podcast. I'm sure that's why he had the good karma. So hopefully now he'll come back again.
Hopefully we'll get him and CB on in the very near future. I love this part of the year. We got a little bit of football, a little bit of local football left with the Longhorns. High school guys are still up and running. Westlake rolling. I was at the Hutto game, and there's several teams still out there. We'll probably, Doug, be at a high school game here in the next couple of weeks. As these local teams make a run at state championships. So we're going to be all over it regardless. And that will do it for episode 242 of On Second Thought. Thanks to Chris Beard for joining us. Safe travels to those of you headed to the mountains. Kirk Bowles, Danny Davis, and Brian. We will be back next week with more hijinks and hopefully better audio. For the Duck, Kirk Bowles, I'm Sid Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sid and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.